We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What's up, y'all? It's Drewski, and I've teamed up with Mountain Dew to produce a hilarious new basketball podcast called The Dew Zone with Drewski. Learn the backstories of your favorite ballers and celebrities like Jamal Murray.
Did you have like a favorite team? Was it the Raptors at the time or no? Was the Raptors even started around that time?
Come on, bro.
I ain't that old, fam. You're talking like I'm 50.
Taylor Rooks, Asia Wilson, and many more. You won't want to miss this. Listen to The Dew Zone with Drewski on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hey there. We at Blue Wire wanted to thank you for your continued support of this podcast. With over 90 podcasts across our network, we are committed to bringing you great content to fill that sports-shaped hole in your heart. To find more Blue Wire Pods, search for us on iTunes or check out BlueWirePods.com. And remember, one day sports will return and it will be glorious. Thanks for listening. On to the show.
What's up, Dynasty Command Center Nation? The rookie draft onslaught continues. I'm Curtis Patrick. Travis May is back. We're going to talk about rookie drafts in the 1QB PPR format. So, we really prefer playing super flex, but we realize this is still probably at least 50% of the industry, and new startups are still 1QB in nature, and you guys need to know what to do in those rookie drafts. So, we're going to go over what happened in the rookie mock, the expert rookie mock, in the RotoViz Dynasty Command Center Rookie Guide, Volume 3. So the post-NFL draft rookie mocks, that was myself and Travis, TJ Calkins, Sean Siegel, and Blair Andrews that participated in the exercise. We're going to go over what happened in all four rounds, and then we're going to just maybe give you a couple of tips for what to do in tight end premium. If you want to see what actually happened in the tight end premium mock draft, you can pick up Volume 3 of the guide today at rotoviz.com. Just check out rotoviz.com and go to 2020 Rookie Draft Guide. It's a link right there on the top of your screen. Anybody two eyes or four can see it. Click on it, $14.99. You're going to get all three volumes, including this most recent one. Game-changing articles on what to do, how to strategize a draft plan, game-changing research on what to look for in wide receiver prospects and running back prospects. We even had my guy arguments. Just really fun, really proud of the project this year, and hope you'll check it out. Before we cut up round one of this 1QB PPR rookie mock draft, want to share a quick word from our sponsor for the episode. They're our exclusive partners. It's BetOnline. You know, there's no NBA, NHL, or MLB going on right now. You probably think there's nothing to bet on, but you're wrong. Our exclusive partner, BetOnline, still has hundreds of events, games, and props you can wager on. From their online casino to poker and blackjack, they're bringing Vegas straight to you. If you're missing the NFL, no problem. They got really creative. BetOnline has live daily Madden NFL 20 simulations you can bet on. You can bet on Survivor. You can bet on Big Brother. You can bet on American Idol or stock prices or even hot dog eating contests. They're open all 24 hours every day, and it's always online. Go to betonline.ag and use promo code BLUEWIRE, that's BLUEWIRE, to join today, and you're going to receive a welcome bonus. Bet Online, it's your online wagering solution. Okay, Travis, I'm done spewing. Take us through the first round of this rookie mock.
Well, first off, you didn't even mention the IDP content like you did last time. We do have IDP content in the rookie guide too. But
well, it's going to be a happy surprise after people spend their 14
there we go.
And 99 cents.
Yeah,
like, a happy surprise. You got to under promise and over deliver,
okay,
Travis, and that's what we're doing here.
Totally messed that one up. My bad. We're not going to dive into IDPs tonight. I won't, you know, go on about Isaiah Simmons and or fourth round defensive backs or anything like that tonight. I'm not going to mess with that. But I will talk about the 1.01, the real 1.01, which is who you selected to kick off round one in our rookie mock, and that is Jonathan Taylor. I know a lot of people love Clyde Edwards-Helaire, and I believe that's both of these mocks that our team, it looks like we still preferred Jonathan Taylor over Clyde Edwards-Helaire for the most part. I think there was only, I believe it was only Blair, perhaps, that actually, I can't remember. There was just one, sorry, Blair, if you're listening, and it wasn't you, but I believe there was just one of our rankers that actually preferred Clyde Edwards-Helaire over Jonathan Taylor still. Not to say that either one wouldn't be a smash, but to no surprise, no one's surprised at all, Jonathan Taylor is one, Clyde Edwards-Helaire is two. They're both fantastic running back prospects, and in one quarterback leagues, they're going to be pick one and pick two in virtually all of your drafts. And so that was no surprise at all to see Jonathan Taylor go one. I selected Clyde Edwards-Helaire at two. Sean Siegel selected CeeDee Lamb at three. Veering away from running back. TJ selected our guy, Jalen Reagor. And then Blair, wrapping up kind of the first run through of the analysts, picked Cam Akers in the five slot. So Cam Akers actually went at the five slot in both the Superflex format and the one quarterback format. One big difference is here that some wide receivers saw some earlier play than they did in the Superflex format. Any surprises there for you in those top five before we get down to the second tier of kind of a round one?
Yeah, for sure. I've done some other industry mocks, and you know, typically it's running back chalk in the top five. You know, we really see, you know, five running backs in a row. You know, I was just on Twitch, the Action Network, with Matt Friedman and Ryan McDowell and Rich Rebar. You know, guys that basically everyone but Ryan there that was on that Twitch had Rotoviz ties at some point in their history. So a lot of overlap and similarities. And what I'm really seeing this year is a trend towards running back. There's multiple reasons for this. You know, the first reason is that, you know, we've seen a little bit of a falling off of the traditional alpha wide receiver producer. And so I think there's a general feeling that, you know, investing heavily in wide receiver is not going to make much of a difference in your actual fantasy lineup. You know, difference between wide receiver 25 and wide receiver 40 isn't, you know, like it was 5 years ago. And so I think that definitely matters. And even the advantage of wide receiver like 4 to 10, it doesn't look the same as it did a couple years ago. Still definitely value in having, you know, a Michael Thomas type producer, but it's just very difficult to project that. And so I think that's manifesting itself in rookie drafts. We also are at a really critical point in the NFL. We needed these running back classes over the last couple of years to come in, but already some people that felt super young and like basically invincible, you know, as recently as like 12 months ago, are basically like you don't even want to touch them anymore. I mean, find somebody that wants to own Todd Gurley or David Johnson, Le'Veon Bell. I mean, the elite of the elite. I mean, I'm hearing people make age-related arguments on Ezekiel Elliott and Alvin Kamara already. Dalvin Cook is in the last year of a rookie deal with banged up knees. Joe Mixon has still yet to really do much as a fantasy producer in his career on a total season basis. Derrick Henry is suddenly old and still has not shown the receiving upside despite leading the league in rushing last year. Nick Chubb has Kareem Hunt to deal with. I mean, you can go up and down really outside of Christian McCaffrey and Saquon Barkley. Those are really the only two people I'm not hearing anyone argue about. I mean, even rookies from last year, David Montgomery didn't really fully hit. Miles Sanders didn't start the majority of the year. He looked great at the end of the season. But it's, you know, still doesn't feel great to project him as a bell cow. I mean, I want him to be bell cow, but you know, I'm not certain he will be. And then Josh Jacobs. I mean, the team goes out and drafts Lynn Bowden Jr. and designates him a running back. So there is plenty going on. There's plenty going on with running backs, really 1 through like 18. Yeah, there's so much going on running back 1 through 18 that these rookies, I mean, people are thirsty for running back. And so I think I'd be really shocked if the most common outcome wasn't 5 RBs going off the board in a rookie draft, and certainly 4 running backs in the first 5 picks. So it was a little bit of a surprise for me to see CeeDee Lamb and Jalen Reagor go in the top 5. Like both those players, understand why they were the targets. But I think wide receiver's so deep that you've got to spend early on running back in this format.
Yeah, absolutely. I will say CeeDee Lamb is still looking like the chalk wide receiver 1. I've been doing this, this I call it the 2020 rookie poll mock on Twitter. Still in progress, but it was interesting to see such a steep drop-off in the poll results once it got to he went actually at pick 6. And the other options on that poll were Jerry Jeudy, Jalen Reagor, Justin Jefferson, and CeeDee Lamb actually took down 58% of the vote and won by a margin of 34% over the second place finisher in that poll, which was Jerry Jeudy. So, and that had several hundred votes on it. It's interesting to see that there was that much consensus on CeeDee Lamb being the top guy still by many people's standards. But yeah, by no means is it surprising that CeeDee Lamb is the first one off the board. It may surprise some people that Jalen Reagor is wide receiver 2 off the board, but not me. I think you and I, we've talked about Jalen Reagor plenty on this podcast. You and I both love him a lot. But yeah, still interesting that he went at the 4 slot overall, given the running backs and the scarcity and desire for that type of player. But moving on to pick 6, you took your guy, kind of a homer pick, but kind of just a right pick to make here, J.K. Dobbins in the 6th slot. That's not probably a surprise to most. Landing with the Ravens, that looks like a decent landing spot. Even if he isn't the primary rusher week 1 of this year, it looks like he could be the future there to pair along with Lamar Jackson. DeAndre Swift was my selection in the 7th slot. That could be a committee, but DeAndre Swift is an immense talent. We were super high on him. Some people had him in really 1.01 overall conversation, even just a few weeks ago. And then in the 8th slot, it's a little bit surprising here, especially when we consider what the market value and consensus might be on this player. But Brandon Ayuk went at the 8th slot, cause again, like you mentioned on the last show, Sean's really high on Brandon Ayuk. And then he actually took him over Jerry Jeudy, who went in the 9 slot. Henry Ruggs in the 10. That was Blair taking that selection there. And then you again taking Justin Jefferson. And then me to round out the end of round 1 taking Denzel Mims. In that range, I'm sure there's some surprises. J.K. Dobbins coming off his 2,000-yard season, that felt like a no-brainer at the 6th slot to me. But does it still feel right? I mean, you mentioned that it should probably be those 5 running backs, but are you worried with DeAndre Swift that is just going to be kind of a messy committee when it comes to Kerryon Johnson and that coaching staff and what they might lean towards this coming year?
Yeah, with Dobbins, I think it's a perfect match. I mean, I wish he would land somewhere that throws the ball a little bit more, but J.K. Dobbins in Baltimore, I mean, that was like, it really is a match made in heaven in terms of his talents. I mean, you know, comes out of an Ohio State offense that was heavy on shotgun runs and RPOs. I mean, he's basically designed exactly for what Lamar Jackson and the Ravens are doing. I mean, I think he's going to literally be like Jamal Charles level efficient in that offense. He's going to be like 6 yards a carry, you know, in his prime with what they're doing. It's going to be really fun to watch. But with DeAndre Swift, I mean, the freaking Lions, man. I just wish that they hadn't drafted anybody premier. You know, I wish they would have drafted somebody that, yeah, you know, like Zach Moss that I wasn't interested in, so I could just totally ignore it. I think DeAndre Swift at this point is simply just better than everyone on the roster. But, you know, Kerryon being there for 2 more years, Kerryon Johnson, is a little bit problematic. I wish that he wasn't there for 2 more years. You know, I hope that this doesn't end up in a split between early down and receiving down work, or, you know, maybe that Kerryon somehow just, you know, looks better in pass blocking, you know, being familiar with the offense. You know, we don't really know what that's really going to look like. And I don't think Kerryon's a garbage player at all. And so I think, you know, they're probably closer in talent than the Lions investment in Swift would tell you. So it's just really unfortunate. In the middle of the first round, though, I mean, I think it's a slam dunk. He's a lot to love as a prospect. The film heads absolutely love him. And he played behind some really great other running backs in Georgia, you know, so you can excuse away a little bit of his early career lack of production. So 107, I mean, I'd be dancing if I got him like you did at 107. I don't feel good about taking him like at the 104, 105 range. I think I still am taking him there because of the running back value versus wide receiver value. But I certainly don't feel as good about it as the value you got here. The really interesting piece is Judy falling. And I think that's actionable for the listeners. And I think Judy is going to fall in a lot of drafts because of the total disagreement in the industry on Judy versus Sutton. You know, Sutton had a great sophomore season, 1,000 yards. You know, obviously showed a little bit of chemistry with Drew Lock toward the end of the season. He's the incumbent. But Judy and Sutton have totally complementary skill sets. And the Broncos have told us that they are shining a signal in the sky that they are not going to try to build a defense to stop Patrick Mahomes. I mean, and kudos to John Elway, because that would be a fool's errand. You're not going to stop it. You're going to have to fight fire with fire. And that's what the Denver Broncos have done. I mean, so now they're going to have two second-round receivers and a first-round receiver trotting out as in their 11 personnel sets. They got Noah Fant and Albert O, and they're just going to let Drew Lock let it fly. And this offense is going to pass early. It's going to pass often, and it's going to support two pass catchers for sure in terms of being fantasy viable. And so even if you think that Courtland Sutton is going to be the 1A to Judy's 1B, you should still believe in investing in two Denver pass catchers. I think that's certainly where I am. I'm less interested in even fighting on the order than I am in saying that, you know, they're probably both in a spot where they could both be top 36 wide receivers. I think they probably both hold each other down from being top 12 wide receivers. And so we see them, you know, land in wide receiver two, wide receiver three ranges. The thing about Judy, though, is, you know, Sutton had kind of the early dynasty value that then kind of it sloughed off a little bit with not having the early production, the beginning of his rookie season, and then he started to gain some momentum. If Judy comes in a new look offense with a sophomore quarterback that breaks out and produces on day one, you know, I think he's going to potentially overtake Sutton in dynasty value, even if he doesn't in fantasy production. So him falling to 109 should really give you a lot of hope that you can get a premier athlete, premier player that could be, you know, maybe Calvin Ridley-esque in production. Is a good way to look at him. And my other takeaway from round one is I absolutely just killed. I just killed this exercise. Jonathan Taylor, J.K. Dobbins, and Justin Jefferson at my three picks. I mean, I'm super pumped about the way that fell. And not that anybody else didn't do a good job too, but, you know, I got three picks. You and I both got three picks in this exercise, and I feel like I nailed mine.
Yeah. I mean, I got Clyde Edwards-Helaire, DeAndre Swift. And then I finished it up with round one at the 1.12, getting Denzel Mims. And I have Denzel Mims ranked even just a little bit higher than that slot. So I just felt like, man, this is a slam dunk for me. I know Mims is that not everyone's as high as I am on Mims. I believe he's my 10th rated rookie right now. I have him over Henry Ruggs. I have him over Brandon Ayuk. Those were the two players in the first round that went in this mock that I have him over. And I just believe that he has one of the most complete profiles in this class. Obviously, he didn't come out as a junior, but that was mainly because there was kind of a down year there for him, I guess, when you compare it to a sophomore and senior season. So he just wanted to, hey, I've got this one more chance to really prove I'm NFL ready. And he did. He did that. He had like over 1,000 yards again, dominated that that offense. And really, I mean, impressed at every step of the way throughout the draft process as well. Just people gushing over his Senior Bowl process. And then, of course, he kills it at the combine. 6'3", 207, running a 4.38, killing it in the jumps, showing he has an immense burst. Love his physicality. Now he gets the draft capital. So Denzel Mims looks like a great value in one QB as an end of the first round type player for me.
Yeah, sure. I think that's fine. I think the takeaway with Mims versus the wide receivers that fall into round two, and even a couple of the wide receivers that went above him in round one. I mean, really, the only round one wide receiver that we can say for certain is going to be the top target in his offense in terms of, you know, athleticism and the type of role. I mean, it was Denzel Mims in this exercise. And then maybe you can make that argument for Henry Ruggs, that those two players would lead their teams in targets as rookies. I mean, CeeDee Lamb's competing with Amari Cooper and Michael Gallup. Jalen Reagor, I think, is clearly going to be the long-term alpha in Philly. But, he does have Zach Ertz to deal with and Alshon Jeffrey and DeSean Jackson. So, you know, in a summer where he might not get to work and create that chemistry with Carson Wentz, the veterans might get the early nod. And then Brandon Ayuk competing with George Kittle and Deebo Samuel, Jerry Jeudy, we already talked about, Cortland Sutton, Justin Jefferson going to be, you know, second fiddle to Adam Thielen at least for 1 year. And so I think there is value. If you're just looking for early production, there is potentially some value with Denzel Mims in that regard. But this value does kind of carry into round two as well, because we see Laviska Shenault, T. Higgins, and Michael Pittman go in three of the first four picks there. I think, you know, if I'm looking in that 112 to 203 range, as much as I like your pick of Mims there, that's the spot where I'm trying to trade down in case somebody wants to move up for Keyshawn Vaughn, or, you know, if somebody maybe values a running back there, because I'm really happy to get any of the four wide receivers in that bunch between Mims, Shenault, Higgins, and Pittman. I talked about this a little bit in the Superflex episode, but in case you don't play Superflex and this is the only pod you're going to listen to, format-wise, Pittman is an extreme target for me now in the second round of rookie drafts. The Rotoviz Sims, after nailing draft position, are just insane. So, I mean, I've already got them memorized. I've looked at them so many times since the NFL draft. Five of his top 10 comps in the Rotoviz prospect box score scout. You know, this is the order. We got Deebo Samuel and A.J. Brown, both in his top five. And then in his bottom five of his top 10, we get in order Michael Thomas, DeAndre Hopkins, and Juju Smith-Schuster. So, I mean, we're talking about three guys who have already slam dunked to their dynasty value, and two guys at the top in A.J. Brown and Deebo Samuel, who absolutely popped as rookies and have immense value already. I love the spot for Pittman to earn a volume role early as a possession receiver, complementing what T.Y. Hilton does. And then, you know, the two guys that went right before him, T. Higgins and Laviska Shenault, I think they're the number twos in their offenses in year one, but certainly could overtake the number ones. It would look a little different. So with Laviska Shenault, he's dealing with DJ Chark. Travis and I both like DJ Chark. He's moved up our rankings over the course of the offseason. But Laviska brings a different skill set. He's a more physical player. They're going to be able to run the ball with him a little bit. He's really going to probably have, you know, a Deebo Samuel type role in that offense. And we know Jay Gruden wants to throw. I mean, Jay Gruden absolutely wants to throw. That's why the team, you know, leaked that they were willing to move on from Leonard Fournette. I think this offense is going to support two pass catchers for sure. And then with T. Higgins, he's absolutely made in the A.J. Green mold. I think it's so appropriate that he lands in Cincinnati as the heir apparent to A.J. Green. And I think with Joe Burrow, there's an opportunity for a fantasy alpha 160 target type role is kind of going by the wayside. And so I just love all three of these guys that went toward the top of the second round here. Definitely prefer them to Keyshawn Vaughn, who went 203. I mean, I understand why Vaughn's climbing up boards, Travis, but I mean, would you take Vaughn over any of those three receivers?
I would not. I actually have, and this is coming from, just let me frame this, Keyshawn Vaughn, I'm a Vanderbilt football season ticket holder. Believe it or not, those do exist. But Keyshawn Vaughn is a good player. He was the best player on Vanderbilt's team last year, and it was a miracle he ever produced anything because Vanderbilt had bottom five, power five conference quarterback play. And so it was impressive that he was able to do what he did. I think he had 130 something yards or so in the LSU game, which, I mean, we're talking about the 2019 in 2020, national champions LSU. He had 130 yards against them. And so he's really impressive in some big spots, but he also could disappear at times. He's just across the board. I mean, when you look at his profile, he's going to be an older rookie. He doesn't do any one thing at an elite level. Yes, he can catch passes. Does he have an elite receiving profile? No, he doesn't. Yes, he is athletic to an extent, but no, he's not an elite athlete at all. And really, I mean, you and I were talking about this before, Curtis. Early on in his career in college, before the transfer from Illinois, he was struggling to, you know, beat out guys who ended up going completely undrafted. One of which is in this class in Reggie Corbin. So it's just interesting to me that that there are so many people that are so high on him. In that that poll mock that I'm doing on Twitter right now, the 2020 rookie poll mock, you can actually look up that hashtag right now. He actually was the consensus 10th overall rookie, which to me is just a little bit crazy that we're reaching that hard for somebody who is barely a day two back, who's a 23, almost 24-year-old rookie coming in and doesn't really check much of any box other than his primary competition is Ronald Jones. When there's so many good wide receivers around still available, I'm not going to be taking Keyshawn Vaughn at least until the mid-second, if not later into the second round.
Okay, yeah. I mean, I totally agree. Keyshawn Vaughn was not a target for me at all. I didn't even have him in my top 24 until after the NFL draft. I mean, I think, you know, most of us who were low on him had to move him. But, you know, the landing spot's great, but it really just feels like a player we're moving simply because of landing spot. And those are the grossest things for me that I have to talk myself into. Because there's, whether or not you like the player, there's going to be dynasty value assigned to him. So even it may even make sense, you know, to draft him with the intent of trading if he does win the role, if you don't believe in him long term. And so, you know, a guy I really respect a lot in the industry, Rich Rebar, talked about this a little bit on a recent discussion we had. And, you know, he was even hypothesizing that maybe Keyshawn Vaughn's best fantasy season could actually be year one. And then, you know, after that, due to age concerns or due to, you know, what Brady decides to do, that his value could kind of deteriorate. And the team, you know, the team's already shown that he doesn't have a lot of patience. This organization doesn't have a lot of patience for the running backs to develop. So if he doesn't pop immediately, he's probably no better off than Ronald Jones was. And it's just, it becomes a messy committee where nobody's fantasy viable, or dependable week to week. So after Pittman Jr., you know, let's go 2-5 through 2-12. The rundown is Joe Burrow, KJ Hamler, Adam Trautman, a bit of a surprise going in the mid-second here, even though this is not a tight end premium set. And we get Zach Moss, Antonio Gibson, AJ Dillon, and Chase Claypool. So if you're, you know, keeping track here, we do see two quarterbacks go despite the format. You know, I think with Joe Burrow and Tua Tagovailoa, it's really just about, you know, the speculation they're going to start early and you're going to recoup some value. And if you don't see the players in the tier as having a high enough floor for your stomach, you know, then take a quarterback that you know is going to start for a couple seasons. But, you know, when you get this type of, you know, short, you know, the Josh Rosen experiment, you know, that is not the most typical path. You know, typically when a quarterback gets drafted in the top 10, they get multiple chances, multiple full seasons to start even. And so if you get past that Pittman range and you're staring at some of these other names, you know, I don't fault you whatsoever in the mid-second for, you know, just ringing up Joe Burrow or Tua in those spots. Did either one of those guys go too early at 2-5, 2-8 for you?
No, I don't think so at all. I believe my 17 and 18 spots in my rookie rankings right now are Joe Burrow and Tua Tagovailoa, those two right there, because it just feels like there's a clear tier break for me and skill position players where I'm just like, you know what, these guys are going to have some value insulation. Yes, it's totally not normal, like you said, for a Josh Rosen outcome to happen. And it's also not super common for, you know, everybody to kind of turn into Lamar Jackson or Patrick Mahomes either, but either way, you're getting some value insulation with these players. They're going to have most of the rookie contract to have some up and down high sell windows for you where you're going to make a return on your investment regardless. It's just if you go too much further than this, you're getting into players that probably have more questions than answers. I mean, you go back, what, very far at all. We're looking at Adam Trautman was the seventh pick in this round. We got to Zach Moss, who, I mean, he's going to be in a timeshare. AJ Dillon, who, I mean, are we sure he's going to take a ton of work from Aaron Jones? And then to round it out, we got Chase Claypool. So, I mean, just feels safer to me to go in the direction of a Joe Burrow and a Tua Tagovailoa than a lot of other options that you can see in the late round too. I mean, are you kind of there too, as far as quarterback values go and rookie drafts?
Yeah. So if we're talking about like a my fantasy league, dynasty league, where, you know, your rosters are 25 or deeper, I would totally be fine selecting these guys, you know. But for those of you, you know, playing FFPC, and I know, you know, we've got rookie drafts coming up this weekend, over on that platform, you know, you're probably going to have a tough time in a one QB format, you know, where you can only roster 20 players during the season. Might be difficult to pull the trigger on a quarterback here. Probably we're going to be casting a few more dice at running backs in this range. Even some guys maybe that fell to round three, like Darrington Evans and Joshua Kelly. I could certainly see them in FFPC formats creeping into the back of the second round there. I want to spend a second on Chase Claypool.
Yeah.
You know, going 212 here, Claypool, you know, he's kind of getting lost because, you know, the wide receiver is just so deep in this class. And he went to the Steelers where, you know, we don't know exactly what Roethlisberger has left in the tank. You know, obviously didn't play, you know, really last year. And it's really just a forgotten season in Pittsburgh for many reasons. And he lands in a place that looks crowded at first glance. You know, we do have Juju there. We've seen James Washington and Deontay Johnson look good at times. Probably helped that Juju wasn't at 100% last year for them to help flash. James Washington famously disappointed as a rookie. And so, you know, the team takes Claypool. They announce him as a receiver. Some people had been hoping that he'd get announced as a tight end. Well, they've already clarified he's going to play on the outside. You know, they're not, you know, they said maybe he gets a little slot work, but he's going to be an outside receiver. And so when you think about the Steelers offense now, you know, Juju's man in the slot, you know, probably based on skill set. I think drafting a player like Claypool signals that they want to move Juju back down into the slot rather than have him trying to, you know, win on the outside. And so somebody's going to be the odd man out. Either Claypool's going to be unsuccessful in the role, or he's not going to be able to beat out James Washington, or neither one of them's going to work in the outside. Juju's going to kick back outside. And, you know, maybe Deontay Johnson gets more slot work. So I don't know what the Steelers offense looks like beyond Juju, but we know no matter what, the number two pass catcher in the Steelers offense is going to be valuable as long as Roethlisberger's there anyway. He's definitely got a long history of supporting two wide receivers and on occasion three. And so if you get into this range and you're looking for ceiling and cheap ceiling when considering draft capital, you know, Chase Claypool, you know, he's a second round pick. You know, Chase Claypool had an incredible, you know, athletic profile, and he did have a 1,000-yard season in college. It feels a lot to me, Travis, like DJ Chark as a rookie 2 years ago, you know, where it's like, well, you know, we just, at that time, believe it or not, Jacksonville was viewed to be a crowded wide receiver situation with D.D. Westbrook. And yeah, I mean, it's weird. It seems weird to think about now, but it was crowded back then. And, you know, it's just kind of, well, it's just a deep, what does he really do? He's just kind of a deep threat. But, you know, he had deep speed and he was a second round pick. And lo and behold, the people who are patient, you know, now are staring at probably a borderline top 24 dynasty wide receiver. And so I think that's range of possible outcomes for Chase Claypool. And I don't, you know, I didn't rank him in this range. You know, he's more of a third round player. I think in my personal rankings, he was 25th in the Dynasty Command Center average ranking. So he goes, you know, right on schedule there. In my own rankings, I'm trying to pull him up quickly here. I've got him, you know, I've got him more in the third round. Yeah. And so at 30, so mid third round. But I don't fault anybody for just chasing the draft capital here at 212.
Yeah, no, I think that lines up perfectly. And really, the Steelers have just been phenomenal at drafting wide receivers. And regardless of what happens exactly with him, I think he holds some just speculative value for a while. People will value him as like a late round, you know, second round player if he does virtually anything on the Steelers this year, just because, you know, he could be that player. And there's already been talk of Juju not even being on the roster in a couple of years. There's buzz from team beat writers and a whole bunch of podcasters that cover the team closer than I do. And I don't know why they would do that, but there's some really negative Juju talk going on. So yeah, Chase Claypool as a wide receiver, or, I mean, let's just say it doesn't work out long term with Vance McDonald because he's still catching, you know, and taking balls 7 yards per catch, and Eric Ebron doesn't pan out because he's freaking Eric Ebron. Chase Claypool would be an incredible tight end for them to play as more of in a big slot role if they spread it out wide, and really he's actually a decent run blocker also. So kind of a Darren Waller-esque ascension isn't out of the question. I did take Antonio Gibson. I talked about him on the last show, but man, in the late second, this is exactly where I'm pulling the trigger on Antonio Gibson, because I think he can be a feature back that can be an efficient pass catcher, but also a fast feature, a big enough, you know, 6 foot, 230 pound kind of monster that if he is given the opportunity for the Redskins. But really enjoyed this draft. I thought the first two rounds, there were a bunch of interesting value picks for sure.
All right, Travis, before we get into round three, round four, want to share a note from Blue Chew. So guys, if you're looking to last longer and go a few extra rounds, go to BlueChew.com. BlueChew.com has the first ever chewable that brings your performance in the bedroom to another level. They've got the same active ingredients that are in Viagra and Cialis. You know they're going to work. Since they're chewable, they work faster. You can take them anytime, day or night, even on a full stomach. So you don't got to, you know, change your schedule around. Plus, you don't have to go to the doctor's office or spend time waiting in the pharmacy line. Everyone's staring, wondering what, you know, prescription you're filling today. Blue Chew's online physician is free of cost. And once it's approved, your order is going to ship straight to your door in discreet packaging. Here's a great deal for all you guys out there. Visit BlueChew.com and get your first order free when you use promo code BLUEWIRE. Just pay $5 shipping. Again, that's BlueChew.com, promo code BLUEWIRE. Okay, Travis, actually, before we hit round three, let's just kind of blend tight end premium in here. You know, we saw one tight end go in round two in the 1QB format, non-tight end premium format. Adam Trautman went to TJ Calkins at 207. In the tight end premium mock draft, we actually saw a second tight end go there. So we saw Cole Kmet go to Sean Siegel in the early to mid second, and TJ again took Adam Trautman just a couple picks sooner this time. And so, you know, really the takeaway here is that, you know, our team at RotoViz, we're not seeing, you know, this isn't a year to spend the first round pick on tight end. No. And it's really for two reasons. You know, one, there's not an elite tight end prospect. No one went in the first round. All these profiles have some holes in them. And then two, the quality of players available at running back and wide receiver are just such this year that even if there was a strong tight end prospect, a round one draft pick, I just don't think they'd be able to crack the first round this year. It's just the quality of the other position players. So keep that in mind. You know, if you are in a tight end premium league, don't overspend in round one. You're going to be able to get either Kmet or Trautman in round two. And yeah, in our exercise, we had a couple guys go in rounds three and four that have some appeal. We'll hit that when we get there.
Yeah, and really, I mean, the tight end position in rookie drafts, in tight end premium especially, a lot of people just go and target those players early anyway. And there are going to be players in your leagues that reach for the tight ends and keep reaching for the tight ends. Maybe half your league just does that regardless because they just feel like tight ends need to go in these slots in any given year. But really, the tight end position changes in terms of value and where a player should be selected more so than any other position in fantasy football. I mean, the quarterbacks and one QB can typically slot in the same spots most years, the top, you know, first names off the board, the real NFL draft board. In Superflex and one QB, they're going in the same spots. But tight end premium, it's still all over the board. Like, I remember the OJ Howard year. I mean, the tight end premium, he was like a 1.05, you know, 1.06 in some of my leagues. And that's just never going to be the case. There should never be a first round tight end this year. Don't reach. If you leave your tight end premium draft without a tight end this year, feel completely good about it because next year is going to be different. There are going to be three tight ends in tight end premium, most likely, that are going to be in the first round discussion. I mean, you got Kyle Pitts from Florida, Brevin Jordan from Miami, Pat Freiermuth from Penn State. There's a couple other players that might work their way in into the conversation, like Charlie Kohler from Iowa State. Next year is a much better tight end class. So if you don't have a tight end right now, trade into that, but don't feel like you have to reach just because of the format. But there are at least some other interesting names that we'll definitely get to here shortly. But I actually kicked off the round three of our tight end premium of taking Antonio Gibson. I had him like all over the place, but he was an early third in tight end premium. He might fall there again, but really in tight end premium, that's pushing down a couple other names and a few other spots, like Brian Edwards, I think, went early round three, whereas he's been more of a late round two, even in Superflex and even in one quarterback mocks. I believe he was a late round two guy, but names like Brian Edwards might fall into round three. He did fall to the 3.03 to TJ there. Joshua Kelly, I mean, you mentioned liking him in, on the last pod as kind of a late two. He falls into round three just about every time, especially in tight end premium, if people are reaching for the Cole Kmets, the Adam Troutmans, and you may even see a couple other people reaching for Devin Asiasi, just because he went to the New England Patriots. He actually fell to the eighth pick in this mock. What are your thoughts on Devin Asiasi now that he is with the New England Patriots, Curtis?
I mean, it's not somebody I was super high on. I mean, really wasn't even on my radar hardly at all. I definitely did not expect day two draft capital for him. So I've had to adjust post-draft, and I think, you know, that he gets a little bit of a bump because, you know, of the perceived opportunity in New England, you know, but we're undergoing a quarterback change. We really haven't seen anybody other than Rob Gronkowski and Aaron Hernandez smash in the tight end role in the Belichick era, you know, save maybe some, you know, sporadic production from Ben Watson at times, if you go way back. So, you know, I think just assuming that these tight ends, because they drafted a pair of them, that they're going to be the next Gronk Hernandez combo. I mean, and then the Patriots are going back to 12 personnel. I think it's misguided. You know, I think you can talk about, you know, the other guy potentially not even really playing a true tight end role if you want.
Sure.
What was it? Dalton Keene.
Yeah. Dalton Keene from Virginia Tech. He was a really kind of a, he was a fun, if you like watching college football, he's a fun player because he plays more of like a fullback, H-back, tight end, almost, you know, big slot wide receiver at times that we kind of motion in and kind of try to dress things up in disguise when they were in a run play or make it look like they were in a pass play. And that's really what he's going to be. He's going to be a chess piece, but not a contributor to your fantasy football team for the most part. And Devin Asiasi, he actually, and I've been digging into transfers a lot more recently in the success of transfers in the NFL. Have a couple of pieces on RotoViz on that. But Devin Asiasi had kind of a weird trek to production just because he was originally with Michigan. I believe it was way back in 2016. Didn't do anything. Ended up transferring to UCLA. And even then kind of had a dud year. But every year thereafter, I believe he had at least a 20% dominator from the tight end position. So that's interesting. And he has adequate athleticism. I think he had like a 4.73 in the 40 or something in that range. So he's interesting, but I'm not reaching for him, even in tight end premiums. Again, I'm not reaching for that position in this format. Albert Okwuegbunam, we talked about him a little bit on the Superflex podcast. But man, he's just a touchdown scoring machine. Even in his quote-unquote bad season, he still caught six touchdowns with a completely inadequate quarterback tossing in the ball on an offense that just couldn't even move the ball against Vanderbilt, one of the worst programs in all of college football. So I am interested in Albert O being a value just because he made it to day three. Because like names like Josiah DeGuara, who I do like also, going to the Packers, Devin Asiasi, and both of those guys went ahead of Albert O in real draft capital. So I think a lot of people are just like throwing darts at these tight ends based on their draft capital rather than the player and the athlete and just the monster that they can be. So I think that's a name I'm watching. But near the end of round three, I actually grabbed Bryson Hopkins, a tight end out of Purdue, which is my alma mater. So maybe I'm a little bit biased. But he's a player that I think a lot of people thought of early on in the process, especially if you looked at some mock drafts and some draft websites early on in this process, thought he could be the tight end one in this class, albeit a weaker class. And he went in the later rounds, obviously goes to the Rams, and he's going to have to go face off with Tyler Higbee and Gerald Everett. And that on paper doesn't sound great, but Everett actually, he's going to be an unrestricted free agent after the 2020 season. And Tyler Higbee, I mean, he did great, I guess, down the stretch. He has kind of a mid-tier tight end two-ish contract to his name, but he's not really, it's not like they have the entire future invested in Tyler Higbee. So in that offense, a guy with Bryson Hopkins' skill set, strength, I mean, he had like 23 reps on the bench. He can block. He can run any route you want him to. And he runs a 4.66. He's got legit speed. He's an intriguing player that I'm targeting at the end of round three and tight end premium all day.
Yeah, man, great overview and tight end premium. Really, round three is where we start throwing those darts.
Yeah.
And so you gave us a ton of names to think about. There's some that you didn't even mention. And the listeners, you know, if you want to see who those names are, you know, I'm going to plug the rookie guide again. You got to go to rotoviz.com and check out the Dynasty Command Center rookie guide. You know, we've got 60 players and 9 tiers for both the 1QB and tight end premium formats. I mean, the simplicity. I mean, we worked really hard to make sure that we were very specific, not only to be very consistent from format to format with how the players that weren't premium moved around. So for example, you know, if you were to take our 1QB rankings, you know, the players who aren't tight ends or quarterbacks are going to appear in the same order. And as you go across the different formats, the people who are moving are the quarterbacks or the tight ends, depending on if we're talking about a super flex or tight end premium league. So in other words, you know, we made sure, you know, that the averages and the ordering was very precise in that top 60. And the tiers are going to be so key as you try to, you know, rather than freaking out and asking people, you know, in the moment for trade advice on Twitter, or even if you're a Slack member in the DCC, it's okay, you know, use tiers as a general guide for trades. I mean, should I trade up here? Well, I don't know. Is there only one or two guys left in the tier above? If so, that's probably your trade up spot. You know, should I trade back? All right, well, we're in tier 7 and, you know, I'm rebuilding this team. We're in the third round and this tier is 10 guys deep. Yeah, I can probably try to trade back half a round and see if I can grab 2/3. And so, you know, those are the types of things that just from looking at a visual, it gives you so many different ideas, and all that's right there in the guide. You know, we try to keep volume 3 very streamlined because we know so many rookie drafts are coming out quickly. So there's no new articles. You've got 3 ranking sets, you've got 3 mock drafts, and you've got the rankings and the tiers. And so, you know, that's everything that you need to go ahead and execute. We've taught you everything about the profiles of these players and their college production in volumes 1 and 2. And now it's just time. It's time to cash in. We've done the adjustment for draft capital and landing spot. Now it's time to go use those picks that you've accumulated. So check that out on the website. We're going to bring this home with some favorite dart throws from round 3 and 4, both for, you know, 1QB and tight end premium formats. And if you want to hear the rest of the names that, you know, appeared in those mock drafts, again, you can check that out in the guide. So I'm going to go first and I'll kick it over to Travis. So in round 3 of a single QB format, you know, we're talking about really it's tier 6 and tier 7. And so, the player that I like the most is still probably Jalen Hurts in terms of making a difference on a roster. We're not even in super flex, and I still just think that when he gets his chance, he's going to have that Konami code. If you want a different player, but at the same position, man, in single QB, I think Justin Herbert's going to be sitting there in round 3, and I mean, he's going to be a multiple year starter. He's got a great supporting cast out in LA with Mike Williams and Keenan Allen and Hunter Henry and Austin Eckler. I mean, that's a pretty good situation. Phillip Rivers was a pretty reliable quarterback too there. And then, you know, certainly I think Justin Herbert could be streamable as early as year 1. So don't forget about the quarterbacks being a value, even in single QB. If you're looking for upside at a position in round 3, you know, I kind of like, this is a little gross because of draft capital, Travis, but I kind of like Eno Benjamin in the 7th round to Arizona.
Yeah.
You know, Kenyon Drake is going to get a chance there, but we haven't seen a 16-game season where he put it all together on heavy volume. Chase Edmonds looked okay, but hasn't always been available. You know, I just think with his receiving ability, if he gets his chance, he might be able to pop. Let's kick it over to round four and some targets there. I've got a couple here. Anthony McFarland landing with Pittsburgh. I think there's a chance to overtake James Conner if an injury occurs. And certainly in year two, he could start with Conner being in a walk year. And then if you want to go with the wide receiver position, there's a couple. I think the guy that's really grown on me after the landing spot is Quintez Cephas. He went a little earlier than I thought he would, given his poor athletic measurables.
Yeah, let's talk about him for a second. I want to hear your take, but I've got some on him as well.
Well, yeah, we might end up with the same round four dart here. But Quintez Cephas lands with the Detroit Lions. And in year two, there's going to really be an opportunity. Marvin Jones probably going to be gone in 2021. Matthew Stafford has, you know, consistently been able to support multiple pass catchers throughout his career, even across multiple offensive system designs. And Quintez Cephas did get high praise from the best cornerback in the draft this year. At Ohio State, you know, said that Quintez Cephas was the toughest assignment he had in his college career. So, I mean, take that with a grain of salt, but he could have said anybody, and he said Quintez Cephas. I think Travis went into this in a previous pod, but I just want to point you back to that. Now that he's been in, you know, landing in a nice spot there, you know, I don't think that we want to ignore that. And so he would probably be late in drafts. He's probably my favorite wide receiver target. You get toward the very end of the fourth round.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'll bounce back to my third round kind of dart throws. But he's interesting just because, I mean, yeah, he had a really slow 40. Don't look at his athletic measurables. He had a really slow 40 at the combine, but he kind of cleaned it up at his pro day some. I think he plays a little bit faster than that. He's decent at stacking and playing physically against cornerbacks and getting over the top of them despite his maybe imperfect long speed. But really, I mean, he just had a really strange career. I mean, he didn't do much his first season. He was supposed to break out in a big way. I actually just talked about this in the players in one of my top 100 series pieces that just dropped today on RotoViz. But his second season, his father passed away, and he actually dedicated his sophomore season to his dad. And he actually dominated down the stretch. He had almost a 40% dominator at the time after 9 games. And then got hurt in his 10th game, broke his leg, actually. And then, of course, before he was supposed to come back and have a monster 2018 season, he actually was accused of there were some sexual assault allegations. And there was a long, long legal process, legal battle. And eventually, right before the 2019 season, he was acquitted of those charges. And it was like the middle of August, and he hadn't been practicing at all, but he showed up and hit the ground running and posted a 35% dominator in his final season. So he struggled to stay healthy at times, had some crazy stories and stuff happen to him, but definitely imperfect prospect. But even this year, he's got Kenny Galladay, an older Marvin Jones, like a 34-year-old Danny Amendola, and Geronimo Allison that he's competing against. So there's a path for him to find relevance even in year one. So he's an interesting end of round four kind of dart throw that I don't think is going to be going very highly in most drafts this year. But I mentioned it on the last pod. I really like Antonio Gandy-Golden in round three. Even at the very end, trying to target Adam Trautman just because everyone's kind of fading this tight end class. Adam Trautman out of Dayton, now with the New Orleans Saints. They did trade their entire day three of picks to try to get Trautman, and he had a 38% dominator as a freaking tight end, which is just crazy, crazy production. I don't care about what level you're playing against. He just absolutely took over that offense, and they just couldn't stop him. And then just a speculative add at the very end of round three, I think is where I have him ranked. Van Jefferson is a transfer. He doesn't have a perfect production profile, but real NFL people tend to like him a ton. So at some point, you're going to want to take a player that was picked 57th overall in the NFL draft, knowing that there's potential value for him taking that wide receiver three role over in LA. Really, round four, I do like targeting also. We mentioned LaMichael Perine on the other podcast, but he had 40 catches last year for Florida. DJ Dallas with the Seahawks in a weird position right now, but It could be that he competes for that backup role with Rashad Penny, and that would have sounded insane even a year ago that he would be in that conversation to be in the backup role for Seattle. But in the fourth round, you could do a whole lot worse than DJ Dallas, a former Wildcat quarterback slash defensive back in high school, converted to wide receiver in the start of his Miami career, and then converted to running back just because he is an all-around just playmaker because Miami needed him to. And it turns out he's actually good at running back too. So DJ Dallas is interesting as well. But one more, James Prochet broke a bunch of records at SMU, found a way to be productive. Even when playing with Cortland Sutton and Trey Quinn, who went on to the NFL, he still posted a 15-16% dominator when he was like a true freshman, I believe, but ended up smashing with like a 39% and a 36% dominator down the stretch and posting decent yards per team pass attempt numbers as well. But I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, Curtis, but that's probably all the time we have on this show. But I hope you guys enjoyed this one and the Superflex special that we just came out with. And we're going to be getting into more of a position-by-position breakdown, talking about some running backs, wide receivers, and where these players stack up in this rookie class, all the more as we continue this rookie draft season. But thanks again for joining us on another Dynasty Command Center podcast. But until next time, keep living that Dynasty life.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.